From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment, our connections with, and impacts upon it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, the Utah State Legislature wrapped up its 45-day winter session last week. And when it comes to issues impacting the environment, there were some surprising results.
Legislators voted on a number of bills that addressed issues concerned with air and water quality, as well as renewable energy. Joining us in the first part of the show to discuss the results of these bills and resolutions will be Luke Carton, head of sustainability for Park City Municipal.
Right. We'll talk about plastic bags, some solar-related bills and resolutions, maybe a water quality issue, Fantasy Islands
we'll
in the middle of Utah
there.
Lake. Really interesting things that have happened there. So it's we'll say it's encouraging.
We also have a few news updates for you. We'll talk about opportunities to give public input on the management plans of the revised national monuments here in Utah. And we also have an update on last week's news about Mike Noel. We talked about the potential conflict of interest. And now, this week, he's decided to retire. So we'll give you the details on that.
All right. We don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our email address, thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are proud supporters of KPCW. We provide up-to-date market information, and our recent market report can be found at bhhsutah.com. Our agents can provide context to these market statistics and can be reached at 649-7171.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain instructors share their love of skiing and snowboarding with guests, helping them improve their skills and enjoy the mountain. More information on Ski and Snowboard School and other programs at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome to This Green Earth, the weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in the studio for the first part of the show is Luke Carton. He's director of sustainability programs and issues at Park City Municipal. Been there for a few years now, Luke?
Two and a half, yeah.
Two and a half. Seems like
flies.
A lot.
Yeah. Time's a flying.
All right. And you're here to talk, among other things, about the recent, we'll call it the winter session of the state legislature gets together for 45 days. And they had hundreds, if not over 1,000 bills or so. It was a tremendous number of bills, resolutions they field.
Yeah, it was a record-setting year. So they churned through a bunch of them, and as you hit on in the beginning of the show, there were some really interesting outcomes.
Yeah. Just when, of course, we're going to focus on the environmental related bills and resolutions, et cetera. And, of course, let's start with the plastic bag ban. Now, give us some context here about the ban itself. When was it put in place? What did it involve?
Yeah, definitely. So Park City has the state's only current plastic bag ban. It was the ordinance was enacted in May of last year. Mm-hmm. However, the key piece is the discussion's been going on for over 10 years in Park City. And the city council had done a lot of things from trying to raise the awareness of reusable bags to declaring, bring your bag day to actually spending actual money to go out and help seed the community with more reusable bags. And it still wasn't solving the issue. So last May, council adopted an ordinance unanimously that affected stores over 12,000 square feet and bags less than 2.25 mil. What that means in non-technical terms is grocery store checkout bags is what we were looking at. We were trying to go after the largest source of those thin film plastic bags. And a lot of people said, well, why? Is it because of barrels of oil or, some other worldwide issue? And the answer is actually no. The answer is because it directly impacts our recycling, our trash, and our litter. Mm. Summit County Landfill, talking to the crew over there, it costs about $100,000 a year to help mitigate those issues. Transjordan Landfill, and this came out during the Senate debate, It's less than 0.5% of what comes across their scales, but it's over 80% of their mitigation costs. They viewed it cost them about $415,000 a year to deal with just plastic bags blowing around.
That is literally litter control on steroids. That's what the landfill's doing with all these bags blowing around. You say less than 0.5% by weight.
Yeah.
But it's a huge, huge percentage impact of their budget.
The other issue, too, that we have here is it gets mixed in with recycling. Now, I hope everyone knows, and if you don't know, now you know, do not put plastic bags in your recycling. Please, 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 please don't.
And that includes putting your recyclables in a plastic bag.
Correct.
Which we take every opportunity to remind people.
Exactly.
So thank you, Luke.
So it slows down the recycling part. It really gums up the machines. It's not good. And then the other part, too, is litter. I think everyone knows, if you drive anywhere in the States and you look at the fences that are along, the wildlife fences are along, you'll see some plastic bags rolling around. So that's why we said, hey, we had to focus really narrowly on that issue.
And by we, this was a community-sponsored grassroots effort.
It
trickled up to, say, city council.
It is an understatement to say community-sponsored.
Yes.
I mean, room was packed. People understood that this is an impact. It's an easy step for us to take. And the other key piece that I want to make sure I give a shout out to are the three retail stores that are participating.
Yes.
They've really stepped up to the plate. They've been great. They were engaged from the beginning. Fresh Market, and also Rite Aid. And you should really thank them because, it was hard. It is a change from what they're used to. And you should make sure that you thank the folks that are working there because they did have to change their operations and it was an impact on them. And they are participating in this. They're being great.
And they had to deal with all the grumpy customers who complained to the cashiers. Like, where's my a paper bag? You know what? I don't want a bag.
Yeah,
what I hear here. I don't want a bag.
So this brings up the question, though: will these stores? Do we know if they'll continue?
Yeah, they will. We'll get into all that here really, really quickly. So the other interesting thing is May when I went in front of council, part of the staff report it did directly call out there is a possibility of preemption. Preemption is the state taking that power away from the city. Utah is something called a non-home rule state. So that means the power actually sits with the state legislature and then they kind of deem power to the cities. That's why we can set building code and zoning, but we can't do things like energy code here. So that's a key piece to understand is the state actually holds the power to be able to take that away. And taking that away is just called preemption. It's a fancy term, but it sums it up well.
All right. So a representative, I think you said Buxton, submitted a bill which would ban communities from enacting bans on plastic bags.
Exactly.
So to speak.
You can call
but
it a,
more than just
yeah,
that.
You can call it a plastic bag ban or bag band ban.
Yeah.
Or you can just call it preempting a city's ability to pass that. Now, the interesting thing is Senator Buxton, it wasn't just focused on plastic bags. It was actually called the Container Regulation Act, Senate Bill 218. You can Google it and read it. It's actually kind of an interesting read. And it would have taken away a city's ability to ban not just plastic bags, but any type of bag, container, which could be like styrofoam or takeout containers, straws, all of those pieces. So it was a very broad preemption that came through. There's also Senator Iwamoto's bill, which was a bag fee piece. And I got asked this a lot, too. Well, can we just charge a fee? As in Utah, we're not allowed to. So that's why we went with the ban ordinance because we say this is an impact on our public health. And truthfully, the great thing about it is if you think it's an impact, charging a fee won't solve it as quick as just getting rid of it. So that's a key piece to understand.
Okay. So the bill has to go through committee.
Yes.
Subcommittees has to be kind of discussed. And how did it do?
Yeah. So it kind of chugged along. This was my first time watching the state legislature work a bill through that I was very vested and interested in. So it went to a Senate subcommittee first, and it passed not overwhelmingly. And the interesting thing is there was a little confusion because Senator Iwamoto's bag fee bill was right before it, and then the container regulation part was just after it. So there was, if you listen to the debate, and the Utah legislature website is actually really interesting. If you select a bill, you can go through and listen to all the debates about it. And, they're usually like just a couple minutes long. So it kind of eked through, and then it got moved up to the Senate. And in the Senate, it didn't make it through one of the readings because they just didn't have enough yay votes. And then procedurally, it got called reconsidered in front of the entire Senate. And it passed, I believe, 16 to 12, somewhere in that range. All right. So once it passed through the Senate, then it shifts over to the House. So the House had, it got assigned to their political subdivisions committee. And it got pulled off of their agenda three times. And then it got put on the House floor Thursday night. Now, for everyone to understand, the legislature is done at, 12:01.
Yeah.
So and at about 10:30-ish Thursday night, the bill got put out onto the House floor. So that's when it was going to get interesting, because if it passed the House, then it would have gone to the governor's signature. So.
And?
Oh, and it got interesting. So this is a huge shout out and a huge thank you to Representatives Quinn and Wild. They represent
both Republicans.
Both Republicans. Yep. Quinn represents Park City Park City, and Wild represents unincorporated Summit County and other parts of Summit County. And they did a lot of amazing work. A couple of key pieces. This was a state versus local control. Some of the representatives said it's kind of strange to talk about federal overreach and then we have state overreach. The other key piece was communities regulate their waste. The state doesn't go out and bid the waste contract. It's done at the community level, and the communities are also in charge of figuring out their recycling and that side of it. So that was another impactful piece. Tim Quinn also pushed the point of saying, if we don't allow cities to regulate plastic bags, what will we allow them to regulate? And he had a very impactful speech on the floor, and the bill got absolutely crushed. It lost 14 yays and 58 nays. I mean, it was an absolute – it got blown out. So that was a really – truthfully, it surprised me to see how strongly the bill was defeated. And it was voted down by a majority of Republicans. I mean, so they viewed it as, hey, this is overreach. Local communities should be able to focus on this. When you view, and Representative Quinn made this point as well on the floor, Park City's a town of 8,000 people. We have to be able to mitigate the waste of 80,000 people. So if we want to do this, that's great. He actually doesn't agree with the concept of a bag ban, but he says it should be up to the communities to regulate what they want. So it died a fairly brutal death on the floor of the floor of the representatives.
Right.
But it could get brought back up. But the great thing is, our local representatives really stepped up and helped, and it got decimated.
So that kind of begs the question: what was the motivation for those that were lobbying for this ban? Tell us about those who were kind of behind it, or the ban on the bans, the preemption.
Yeah, one of the issues was patchwork legislation. So the thought was, if you were a retailer and you had 8 stores in 8 different cities, and you had to comply with 8 different types of bag legislation, that could get complex and confusing. A lot of what was going on in California got brought up on both in the Senate and the House. The concept of a waiter getting arrested for offering someone a straw, Malibu's straw ban got brought up quite a bit as
right.
well.
That's new.
Yeah. So it took a lot of heat. We got compared to San Francisco, California. there were some things that were thrown around that made me chuckle. But the interesting thing was, a lot of those pieces were brought up of saying, hey, we don't want this patchwork piece. The flip side of that, though, is and Representative Quinn also pointed out, well, we have a patchwork of taxes, depending on what's enacted in that side of it, too. So he knocked a pretty big hole in that one. But the biggest issue was the patchwork side. The liberties of businesses was another part that was brought up as well.
Got it.
All right. So this is interesting, again, from the way the votes unfolded, how much it lost. Because let's remember, there are other states around this country that have those bans in place. Michigan put a ban in place, which was retroactive. I think it impacted Ann Arbor, I think, or so, had a ban on plastic bags. And then the Michigan legislature voted to preempt that.
Yep.
So it's happened in other states.
Idaho as
think,
well.
Idaho, okay. But here, a different point of view. Very interesting.
That's interesting that Idaho, sort of our neighbor right here, has had an opposite experience with that.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's been interesting. I believe there's six or seven states that preempt cities' abilities to pass plastic bag bans.
Yeah. Okay. So if you just joined us, we're speaking with Luke Carton. He's head of sustainability with Park City Municipal. We're talking about another update on the latest legislative session down in Utah Legislative Congress, Senate, and House of Representatives.
Whatever that government is called.
So that's the bag ban. Let's turn our attention to some of the other bills.
Yeah.
There were, like we say, there was areas of renewable energy, solar. There was some water-related bills. What else was the city tracking?
There were quite a few. We can start off with all the rooftop solar pieces.
Okay.
So, you know, everyone remembers that there was, and it's been churning through the regulatory piece of it, the administrative part. So this is a lot of part. There was an agreement behind the scenes that dealt with rooftop solar. What was the pathway forward? We don't need to get into that very, very, very technical and boring tale. But the great thing is the legislature passed what needed to get passed. So the concept is the rooftop tax credit got extended out, which was huge. That was actually wasn't going to be existent this year. Now, all of a sudden, there's a $1,600 tax credit, which is awesome. It also kind of it sets up the legislative piece, which sets up the regulatory piece for the transition period for solar, which is huge. That passed. If folks have any questions, you can just reach out to me directly or truthfully Rocky Mountain Power or any of the solar installers will know.
Right.
But that the $1,600 tax credit's good for a few years, and then it steps down by $400 increments out till like 2022 or 2023.
2024, it sunsets totally. But again, this was thought that none of this was going to happen.
No. Yeah,
this was going to sunset this year.
So the tax credit piece came out of the intervene docket, which started December of 2016, I believe. Yeah. So it's been in the works for a while. And that was something that Park City directly intervened on to with the Public Service Commission saying, hey, we have a stake in this both as a customer and a community because we have rooftop solar and we also are a community that allows rooftop solar. So that's a great thing because it just provides certainty out that window,
sure.
as much certainty as you can provide, which was huge. Another interesting one that folks might not be aware of, and it's strange if you're not in the world of understanding utilities, was called the electric
let's see.
Energy amendments, something along those lines. It was a really short bill, and everyone was kind of confused by it. What it does, it actually allows Rocky Mountain Power and their parent company to monetize utility scale renewables like a private developer. So electric energy amendments, it was called. What this means is, so if a private developer wants to go build a gigawatt of solar somewhere, they can monetize that differently than a utility, because a regulated utility, you know, the monopoly that they are regulated. They have to spread out how they monetize it over 20 years, while a private developer can take the money, they can change it around and take the money up front. So it enables them. So what it does is it actually allows the utility to now compete in this sphere. They don't have an unfair advantage. That was one of the concerns. But the interesting thing is Berkshire Hathaway couldn't really compete against some other renewable developers. So the interesting thing for our community is with our 100% renewable piece, we just had pretty much Berkshire Hathaway step into the game as well. So that's a large, you know, that's just another bringing more competition to the market, which is good for ratepayers. We had
I think that was House Bill 261 that you might have been referring to, renewable energy amendments. So that's good news. Utah Clean Energy website just simply concludes more solar energy in Utah. So good news on the solar energy front.
Yeah. Yep. That and Utah's about to be on a boom of renewables, especially when you just even look at the communities that have already committed. Summit County, Park City up here, Salt Lake City, and Moab. It's going to be serious amounts of power that are going to be put in the ground, which is going to create jobs. Over $150 million in tax revenue, about 20,000 jobs, clean renewable energy. I mean, it's going to be we're on the cusp of a boom right now. Wyoming's going to see a huge boom in wind as well, because, you know, in Rocky Mountain Power's latest integrated resource filing, they said wind is so cheap, we should be building it. I mean, there was another great article that came out of Colorado Excel, their major publicly traded utility there. Wind was coming back at $14 a megawatt, which was unbelievably cheap.
I think we talked about that Colorado Excel is saying that they're with their RFPs that wind is beating coal and other sources of energy easily.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Okay. All right. I tell you what, let's take a quick break, get some underwriters in. We come back, we've got a few more bills to cover, and then I'll get an update on what's going on with the city with respect to your 100% renewable energy programs and initiatives.
Awesome.
All right? All right. We'll be right back. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
This is Brenda with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage collection. Information about what is acceptable to put in your curbside recycling bin can be found at summitcountyrecycles.org. Please help Summit County be clean. Remember to recycle.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
All right, Nell, you and Luke were chatting.
we were whispering over here about what we had managed to cover and what we hadn't.
So,
we've got a long list here.
Yeah.
What's next?
So I was circling back to one of the bills that we already discussed and asking about the rooftop solar tax credit extension. And there's a net metering piece of that too, right?
Yes. So really, really quickly to cover that part. So if the tax credit didn't pass, so net metering, when you have your rooftop solar, when it's putting power back on the grid, you're completing net metering. Now, under the new rules, under the transition tariff, that's measured in 15-minute increments. And now that the tax credit's passed, you will get a 90% credit of what your residential rate is. So let's do some easy numbers here. Let's say your residential rate's 10 cents, even though it's not. You would get a 9-cent credit for every kilowatt hour you put back on there. Mm-hmm. So that's why the net metering piece is laid in there. Like I said, it's a lot of kind of crazy math, and I can walk you through it, or truthfully, solar installers can walk you through it, or Rocky Mountain Power even has, they're updating everything right now. But it's just tweaks how you're compensated for the energy you put on the, and this helps set it forward so then the regulators can march on from there.
Again, provides that certainty you were mentioning. This one, this move goes until 2036, so that's a nice period of time to kind of know how you'll be compensated for your solar.
Yeah, it lays out the path, and if you're grandfathered in, your rate's good through 2032 or 34, somewhere in that range. So you've got years and years and years.
Sounds good. Another relatively straightforward bill that we've talked about here in the past is this auto dealer license amendment. So tell us about that one.
Fancy thing, which means you can not only test drive a Tesla, now you can go buy one. That's what it does. And that one actually passed through the House Representative unanimously, which was 71-0, which was kind of a shocker. I have no idea what the backstory on that is. But yeah, so now Tesla won't only operate a showroom. Now it's an actual dealership.
And there was this funky rule that disallowed direct sale manufacturers, right? So the manufacturers, the cars couldn't actually sell here in the state.
It's confusing, and every state's a little different too. So it's just allowing Tesla to be a direct kind of dealership, auto dealership piece.
But again, no more than just a couple years ago, that was a non-starter.
Correct.
So sorry for the pun, but that was going to go nowhere. That was almost intractable. And here, 2 years later, 71-0.
Yeah,
unanimous.
It just flew through.
Okay, so now Tesla you can buy a Tesla.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those really
down Salt Lake City.
Yep, interesting concept.
Okay.
Speaking of electric cars, though, while we're on that. So one of the issues with electric vehicles are because you don't use gasoline, you don't pay gas tax. Gas tax is what repairs the roads. So Utah looked at how to add it into the registration fee for both hybrids and electric vehicles. Not the best outcome. I forget the number off the top. 100.
Well, it says here really fees for electric vehicles fell from the original $156 a year to $120.
Yeah.
So you're now going to pay $120, which will be phased in over the next 3 years, while fees for plug-in vehicles fell from $80 in, I guess, the original form to $52 a year. So, you know, say not the greatest, but it managed to drop a bit.
Yeah, and the phase in too, it was a really complex bill that was bouncing around. It was tied in with the transportation governance amendments as well. So there was a lot of moving parts in that bill. But the goal is to have now it's I believe it'll be roughly the we'll be in the top 10 for electric vehicle fees for that. But originally it was going to be we were going to be the second most expensive in the country. So and this was great work by Utah Clean Energy to help push that down, because when you think about the Wasatch Front, yes, okay, those cars are, you could say, not paying their fair share of wear and tear on the roads. But the flip argument is they are doing more than enough of helping clean up the air, because 48% of the inversion issues they have down there are from cars.
Right. Cars. And it says that Utah Department of Transportation will be required to invest up to $200,000 a year on new charging infrastructure, et cetera, which is almost the amount of money that they would collect from these fees.
Exactly.
So it's going back into the electric infrastructure.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with UDOT involved, but also Rocky Mountain Power still has their STEP legislation piece. So if you're interested in doing, if you're a business and you're interested in doing a level 2 charger or even a DC fast charger, which are the ones, level 2 chargers like what we have in China Bridge, reach out to me, because Rocky Mountain Power will pay 75% of that charger cost. So I can walk you through all the paperwork. It's really straightforward. It's really easy. It's a prescriptive rebate, so you know how much money you're getting. It's a pretty sweet deal, and that'll sunset in just a few years. So it's a great time to take advantage of that.
So this is a level 2 charger I can install in my home or in my business.
At your business, I'll double check. I believe it's all non-residential, but I will double check. So if you're a business and a level 2 charger, we're not talking huge amounts of money here, like $3,000, but you got the utility paying 75% of it.
All right, you said contact you before we forget how they contact you.
Luke.carton at parkcity.org, or the easy way to do it, we just started this new email address, energy@parkcity.org. Pretty easy to remember. Or just go on the city website, environmental sustainability. There's two of us, so you'll either talk to Celia or myself.
energy@parkcity.org. Okay. All right, we got a few more minutes. Any other bills or resolutions? There was that resolution.
The concurrent resolution on economic and environmental stewardship.
Yes.
HCR 7. So this one's interesting. It's non-binding, but it is impressive to say that the legislature and the governor will use sound science to address the causes of a changing climate and support the innovation and environmental stewardship in order to realize positive solution. What it means is that the legislature and the governor actually view climate change as an issue, and there's a potential huge economic upswing in this, and we need to do this to be good stewards of our environment. Interesting thing on this bill, if you read through who voted for and who voted against it, you'll see some Democrats who voted against it, which is kind of a head scratcher. The interesting thing on that is because there was some air quality language that was struck out of that bill that talked about air quality issues and asthma. And that gave a bad taste to some legislators. So they struck out, it was like two or three lines. And that's why Senator Escamilla voted against it and a few other folks. But it still passed through. Like I said, going back a few years ago to have the state that you would have been laughed at to try to float that through.
I mean, to even use the words changing climate, that's a big deal in the state of Utah. Super impressive.
It's an impressive step. It's not... You know, it's not a binding resolution that's going to fix everything, but you know what? This is a huge step forward for the state.
This is a resolution, again, that lost last year on an 8-8, 5-5 tie. It was a tie. It didn't come out of committee on a tie, but they were very hopeful. And this year it passed.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again to a lot of efforts from a lot of high school students who voiced their concern and college students who played a big role in helping to lobby for that. All right. So that's resolution HCR 7. And again, you can go to the Utah Clean Energy website, uce.org, and get a summary, a nice summary of all these bills.
Yeah, they have a great write-up on their website of what they were tracking, what they were supportive, what they were watching, and what they were fighting for. It's a really good summary of what the bill. It kind of boils down the bill too, so you're not reading through legislative ease. So.
Oh, and a real quick sidebar while we're talking about student activism. I got this. Lawmakers also approved a number of measures expanding voter access, including a bill to allow 17-year-olds to vote in a primary election if they turn 18 before the general election. So learn more about that. But this is an opportunity for 17-year-olds and 18 high school students to vote in primary elections. Go do a little more research about on the details of how you register. But that's important.
Yeah, it's huge.
With a lot of student activism going on these days. Okay, let's see. We've got. I'll tell you what. One more quick break, and I want to come back. There's a couple other bills, including this one about wanting to turn 600 miles and the name 600 miles of roadway after president. Yeah, you can look away after.
Here we go.
Nell and I will take care of that one. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Kevin Holliday, bike buyer for Jan's, supporting KPCW. Jan's Bike Shop is open year-round for sales and service. We offer bikes from Trek, Scott, and Santa Cruz. Bike apparel from Gore, Bontrager, and Club Ride. Available at our flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or jans.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Luke Carton is still here with us talking about his experience with the legislative up. You said this is your first time that you've really been down there in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, I misspoke. I've only worked for the city for a year and a half. But yeah, this was the first time we'd actually had, and it was something that directly affected what I do.
Yeah. Well, good job. What you did. I hope you'll go back.
Yeah, well, the big shout out too is to Matt Dias, our assistant city manager. He knows the work. It is a sausage maker. It's a different world down there, and Matt knows that world better than anyone. And he's a huge resource because he knows when to push, when not to push, and then that side of it. So it was awesome, and thanks to Matt.
All right. So what else did we have now? A couple other bills. I know you weren't here last week, but we were talking to Zach Frankel about a couple of House bills. HB 272, which was actually an effort to kind of save Utah Lake, which is, you know, right now doing well.
Some
efforts there to under this bill that would swap land to, in effect, allow a developer to come in and build islands in the middle of Utah Lake that would be development, residential development, some commercial enterprises there. But islands, much like the islands you see off the coast of, say, the UAE, United Arab Emirates, those fantasy islands shaped like palm trees and such.
Yeah.
So that was the idea to allow. That was HB 272. I don't think it passed. I tried to find if it came out of either a committee or so. I don't think so. But that was one bill we were tracking. Did you have any others? Or?
No.
Okay.
I think we've checked through our list here of environmental bills.
Well, I thought there was a bill, an 11th hour bill that would rename 600 miles of a scenic highway in southern Utah after the president. This is a bill that was sponsored by Representative Mike DeWell. And the bill was said to be a thank you to the president for his proclamations last December to shrink the Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument.
We should mention that the highway is currently named the Utah National Parks Highway.
Oh, that's good. Okay. That's like 191.
I guess so.
191. Part of it goes through Moab, et cetera. I don't think it never made it out of the full House for a vote.
Noel pulled the bill. He said that he did have the votes, but he was worn down by hundreds of personal attacks.
Oh.
So he ended up pulling the bill before it.
Yeah, it received more than a share of attention. Okay. It's a little bit too premature. That's what one article said. So
happened quickly.
And speaking of Mike Noel, you have some news about him.
Well, yeah. So last week we, or gosh, was that 2 weeks ago? I'm losing track of time here. Covered some news about Mike Nowell's land holdings within the Bears Ears National Monument.
Right.
And a potential conflict of interest in that he had not disclosed the ownership of the company that owned the land within the National Monument. And interestingly, he just announced that he has decided to retire this week. And so he says, quote, "I have a new wife, a new life. I have 48 grandchildren, and I'm missing their lives." And so he's planning to spend more time with his family. He says he has no idea what he's going to do after the session, but he says it's time to phase out after 16 years of service. Interesting timing. And I think there are people that stand on, definitely people that stand on both sides of this. I guess the Western Values Project, who we interviewed about this conflict of interest, they came out and said that, there still should be ongoing investigations. He should still be held accountable for these actions. They say even if he's no longer willing to face the public as a legislator, while others are saying this is a real loss for the state.
Right.
Move.
Well, I'm sure he has lots to do, because he's the executive director of the water district down in Washington.
Right, and he's also a farmer, a rancher.
Yeah. He'll be busy.
So interestingly, there were some nice comments about working with him.
Sure.
Even from across the aisle, from the Democratic side of the aisle. So Representative Angela Romero said, as a person, he's got to be one of the kindest I've ever met. And she talked about his role in funding the state process for the rape kits to be processed for DNA. So
good. All right.
And a polarizing character, I would say, but he's had quite a mark on Utah.
But effective. I guess he's gotten a lot of things done. Okay. Hey, I digressed for a second. I was just trying to segue in the Mike Nowell thing. But I wanted to get back to you, Luke, with respect to the city's ongoing efforts and 100% renewable energy.
Yeah, definitely. So
give us an update on that.
A couple quick updates. If folks are interested, a week from this Thursday, we are having a workshop with Rocky Mountain Power. It'll be a third-party facilitated workshop to look at kind of a longer-term electric energy strategy that'll really focus on energy efficiency, electric vehicles, and it'll be really set by the community. The interesting thing is Rocky Mountain Power's energy efficiency team will be there as well. So one of the goals is, one of the easy examples is we'll have a small business lighting retrofit program that will go out, do a quick audit, get back to the business owner about what the capital cost would be to do a lighting upgrade. And all of those upgrades will have better than an 18-month payback. And it'll have about the utility will buy it down, depending on the project, between 50% and 70%. So it's a huge, huge economic driver and an environmental win. Same thing. Folks can reach out to me if they want the invite to the meeting a week from Thursday, 9 to noon. It'll be at the Board of Realtors. But just reach out to me, luke.carton@parkcity.org, or just find me on the city website. The other interesting thing is in the next few weeks-ish, we are going to be issuing our joint RFP with Rocky Mountain Power, Salt Lake City, and a couple other groups for our 100% renewable part for our city operations. So this is our 2022 goal.
Right.
Really key piece to understand on that is this will be, we're on a timeline. So we have to get through all the RFPs and all the engineering pieces by May of 2019, and then we'll switch into construction phase. It'll be a third-party developed renewable energy facility sited in Utah. So it'll create jobs and tax revenue and also lock in our utility rates. So to put it in real-world perspectives, you look at the buses we have. Everyone knows the cost of gas and diesel jump all around all the time. All of a sudden, our fuel cost will be stable, and it will be absolutely clean energy. Another cool update on the bus piece, we're running numbers right now. I'm just pulling together the rest of the numbers, but just on a pure fuel cost, so to drive a bus a mile or drive a bus a few miles, we did a comparison between the diesel buses we currently have in our fleet and the electric buses that everyone sees running around. We can run an electric bus If you spend a dollar, you can run an electric bus 4.76 miles, so just 4¾ mile, which is unbelievable. That's awesome. It takes our diesel buses get around 4 miles to the gallon. So if you cost a diesel, you know, just a hair under $3 right now. So it's roughly a third of what it costs to run a bus. The mileage piece. Now, we still have to work in the battery lease, which will drive the cost of electric bus up a little bit. But we're also going to work in all of the maintenance costs on the diesel buses, which will really drive that up. So the great thing is that the buses are proving their worth. They are saving us money. They are, you know, cleaning, keeping our air clean. And we are getting more electric buses this fall. They'll be extended range buses, so they won't use the overhead chargers. On a test track, the bus has got 1,100 miles. On one charge, we think we'll be able to get in like the 500-mile range with these buses. So they'll be running the more of the interior routes. That's going on. The other interesting thing that we're looking at for the city that folks should do some research on is this was kind of a shocker. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, the IRS issued a letter about battery storage, which was really interesting, kind of out of left field. So if you have rooftop solar and it charges your battery, so your battery is now viewed as a part of the solar energy system, you qualify for the federal tax credit, the investment tax credit, which is 30%. So I looked this morning, Tesla Powerwall, which is, you know, the fancy shiny one. There's other competitors out there as well, about $6,000. So you'd be able to take a 30% tax credit on that if it's fed by the solar panels. Now this was a letter. So this is kind of the rock in the pool. Now the ripples are going to come out. And we're going to work with the utility. I'm going to get their interpretation on it, because if we get the utility interpretation and the IRS kind of issues some more guiding pieces. But the interesting thing is it just pretty much said battery storage that is fed directly by your renewable energy system, and it has to be that direct tie, qualifies for the tax credit, just like, you know, so you get 30% off your solar panels. You could also potentially get 30% off your batteries. That's still working its way through, so don't go jumping up and down quite yet, but that was a huge signal from the IRS. The other thing that folks will be interested to know about is in the next few weeks, we're going to be going in front of Planning Commission first and then City Council to update all of our how we look at solar in our zone districts. So what we're trying to do is speed up the process. There is a Department of Energy program called SolSmart, and we are going after the highest certification we can. And the great thing is it'll actually simplify how we look at solar in every single zone district. So it'll make it easier. It'll be, you know, our job as a city is to take the barriers away as fast as we can. And you can get a building permit fee waiver if you put solar on your rooftop. We have an expedited process. So our building team is awesome. They can turn through a solar permit really fast, like 15 minutes fast.
Wow.
They're just so used to seeing them.
Sure.
You know, so we and they're taking classes. They've really jumped on this as well. And we're trying to just clean up the planning side as well. We've got great support. We've been working with the planning team as well. So it'll comply with everything from if you're in Park Meadows to even historic. And it will give us a clearer definition of where we can put solar than even what Boulder and Portland have. So that's where we're going in the next few weeks.
Well, if we're comparing ourselves to those two places, I think we're in good shape then.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Maybe even California can be compared to.
Yeah.
How dare us. That's great. And even where I live in Racquet Club Village, just 2 years ago, the idea of putting solar panels on those roofs was a non-starter. Now we're moving forward, and there's at least the evaluations and assessments for some homeowners with the right roof aspect, will be allowed to install solar panels. So like you say earlier, there's a lot of momentum here in the area of solar in this state, where there should be.
And the other cool thing, too, is part of the social equity challenge that City Council just had. Celia Peterson, who I work with, who's the other half of the environmental team, she pulled together of all women, and that women's group really focused on energy efficiency because In Summit County, according to the HHS, House and Human Services, if you're below the poverty line, you spend almost exactly a quarter of your monthly take-home pay on energy. So that you know, we talk about, hey, you know, it's really expensive to live here and it's hard to live here. The goal is if we can help reduce energy costs, that's money right back in folks' pockets. So we just got some prototypes in, and in the next few weeks, we're going to be pulling together these home energy audit kits. So folks can check them out from the library And I've actually got one in my bag. You can plug it in the bottom of a smartphone. We'll have some cameras as well. And you can actually go with, around your house with a thermal camera and understand, is it the windows that are leaking? Do I need to seal the doors better? Or something like that as well. And those will be checked out for the public. There'll be a little training video to watch to understand how to use them and what you can do for the highest impact. But look for that in the next few weeks or months as well as we get that program up and rolling. Our goal is to get it out in the community and let folks understand where their energy's going.
The Library of Things continues over at the Park City Library. Kudos to them. All right, Luke. Anything else? Luke, sorry for having you spend the whole hour, but that was great.
Yeah, lots to cover, apparently.
Thanks,
and lots learned. Yeah. And again, it's luke.carton@parkcity.org or the new website email address.
Yeah, you can just
energy.
energy@parkcity.org. We just launched it. So if you want to help us debug it, send us copy me on it. And like I said, if you need our phone numbers are on the city's website as well. Happy to chat with anyone out there. We've got a ton of other things going on with composting and open space, tree plantings, anything like that. We'd love talking to the folks and getting their feedback.
All right. Luke Carton, thanks as always.
Thank you.
We'll see you. All right. One quick break. We're going to come back. Then we got a news item, I hope.
We do.
All right. Say yes. We'll be right back.
Quarterly Summit Community PowerWorks reports during this green earth is brought to you in part by Rocky Mountain Power. Being energy efficient is good for you and the Wasatch Back. Being mindful of how you use energy makes our community better. More information on how to make a difference at wattsmart.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. We got a few minutes for a news item, calendar event things. Let's start with the news item.
So we have obviously been trying to stay up to date on what's happening with Utah's national monuments.
Yes.
So just to give a quick, reminder, a little bit of context. In December of last year, the president signed proclamations that reduced the boundaries of the Grand Staircase, Escalante, and Bears' National Monuments. And they reduced the boundaries of the monuments to 3 units within the bounds of Grand Staircase, mm-hmm. and then 2 within the bounds of the previous Bears Ears National Monument. And so now there are these 5 new units that have to be managed. So the BLM is moving forward with creating land use plans, these management plans for mm-hmm. these places, as well as the lands that were excised from the Grand Staircase National Monument. That had been managed as the national monument. So there's a lot of reworking in these management plans.
So even those lands that are excised, removed,
right.
still
now they
fall
need a
under,
new management plan.
But they could still fall under the purview of, to one degree or another, of the Bureau of Land Management.
Yes.
So yes, okay, that's interesting.
And there's opportunity to give feedback. In January, I think it was January 16th or so, they opened like a 60-day comment period, and you can hop online and give your feedback. And that closes in a couple of days here. Mm. But the new news, I guess the new release, is that on Friday at almost midnight, the Department of the Interior announced that the BLM would be holding just 4 public meetings to solicit input on the management plans. And just as a comparison, when Grand Staircase was originally created and developed, the administration, which was the Clinton administration, held 15 meetings in 7 states over the course of 2 months.
Right.
These meetings that are going to be held for Grand Staircase and Bears Ears are being held just later this month. So,
and all within the state of Utah?
Yeah. And they're all actually... So I'll read briefly where those are. On March 26th, there's a meeting in Blanding at San Juan High School. On the Tuesday, the 27th, there's one in Bluff at the Community Center. On the 28th, which is a Wednesday, there's one in Kanab at the middle school. And then on Thursday, the 29th, there's one in Escalante at the Canyon Country Lodge. And this is all online. So if you Google, public input, National Monuments of Utah, you'll find this. It's on the BLM's website. And then you also will have, they have to accept comments received within 15 days of the last scheduled public meeting on the subject.
On the 29th.
So there also will be another opportunity to provide written comment. And there are links to how to do that online. And links to where you can read a little bit about these proposed management plans.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's a short,
good catch now.
Compressed time period.
I know.
And it's coming up really soon. So if you're interested in attending, and they're only on weekdays.
And they're only down in the southern part of the state.
And they're,
Okay. And the four straight, Blanding, Bluff, Kanab, and Escalante. Okay. We'll try to track those. Maybe get a hold of somebody from SUA to give it, who will probably be attending those meetings, and talk to them.
Yeah. And there's, visit BLM.gov and you can find information on giving online comments, comments submitted directly through the website or email, or written comments that you can mail to PO Box number 7, you know. So you can do it in whatever way works for you.
All right. Good one. Let's take one last break, and we come back. Well, it's pretty much time to wrap up.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Hey, it's time to wrap things up on This Green Earth. One calendar event item, Recycle Utah is hosting a green drinks event tonight at 6 p.m. at the Kimball Arts Center. And guest speaker will be none other than Brian McInerney from the National Weather. We chuckle because Brian is here at least four times a year, and it's actually his time.
I think Brian is our town's favorite speaker. We ask Brian to speak at everything. And for good reason.
Yeah, and good reason, because he has a lot to say, and it's all very interesting. I think his topic tonight is about water, hydrogeology, the reservoirs, the state of our water cycles and watersheds, not so much weather in this one. But we will have him on in a week or two to talk about weather and climate and reservoirs, et cetera. So that's Brian McInerney tonight at the Kimball Arts Center at 6 p.m., it's a green drinks event, a network for businesses with an environmental mission, environmental stewardship in mind, hosted by Recycle Utah. Hey, we got 1 minute. Of course, it's time to thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, listeners like you.
Listeners like you who help to make this show possible. And thank you again for all your pledging a couple weeks ago. We're very successful.
Very successful pledge drive. We were thrilled with that.
Without you.
You can always email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. We love to hear from you about what you want to hear.
Yeah, you want to hear more about air quality, water quality, ecosystems, habitats, books.
Politics,
on environmental
legislation.
Exactly. I think we've covered that enough these last
today,
2 weeks.
Today, yeah.
For at least the next session in the summer. Hey, thanks again. Remember,
this is KPCW.